My name is Maria. I'm a freshman in college, and I think I'm a pretty confident person. Back in high school, though, I was extremely shy. Back then, a few guys asked me out, and I always said no. I was just too afraid to get close to anyone. All that changed my senior year, when I met Justin. Justin was everything I wanted in a boyfriend. He was smart, funny, really good-looking. He was almost too good to be true. He asked me out in history class, and we ended up meeting up at an Italian restaurant for dinner, his treat. We had so much to talk about. It was amazing. Once the waiter dropped off the check, Justin paid and asked if I was ready for him to take me home. I told him no. I wanted this night to last forever. He got this strange look on his face and said, "Do you want to go to the most romantic place in town?" "Of course," I said. So we hurried outside, and instead of going to his car, we left the parking lot and walked onto the street. I had no idea where he was taking me. I'd driven on this road before, and aside from the Italian restaurant and some old hotels, I didn't think there was anything else in walking distance. Then we got to an old iron gate, and my heart sank. He was taking me to the cemetery. "What are you doing?" I asked. "Trust me," he said. "This is the most romantic place in town." He smiled at me and reached for my hand. "Will you come with me?" "No," I screamed and ran away from him. I thought that this night was too good to be true, and I was right. He was messing with me. He was going to take me into the cemetery and play some horrible trick on me. He'd probably just leave me there. I mean, why else would he take me to the cemetery? Well, I had too much self-respect to let him get away with that. Unfortunately, I had no idea where to go from there. I just kept running down the sidewalk, and the cemetery just rolled on and on. It must have been huge. I kept running until I saw a man standing up ahead. He was dressed all in black, so I assumed he'd just come from a funeral or some grave visit. He asked me where I was going, and I told him that I just wanted to get back to the city center. "You're in luck," he said. "Cherry and Elm Roads are just on the other side of the cemetery. I come here a lot, so I can show you a shortcut." Before I could answer, he started walking toward the side gate. I was hesitant to follow him, but I really didn't want to see Justin again. And the guy seemed pretty normal, so I followed him through the gate and into the cemetery. Together, we walked through rows of graves. "It's just up ahead," he said. "Just a little bit farther." I followed him past a new gravestone and an open hole where someone was going to be buried. A chill ran down my spine. I started doubting my decisions. Why had I followed him? Why had I agreed to enter this horrible place? "Maybe I should go back," I said. "My friends are probably waiting for me." He looked at me for a long, silent moment, and he smiled. "You never mentioned friends before," he said. "Yeah," I said. "They're trying to find me right now. They're pretty close." The night was already cold and dark, and now that we were stuck in the rain, I felt so scared and vulnerable. I started walking back toward the gate where we entered, but the man rushed forward and grabbed my wrist. "Did I say you could leave?" "Please," I said. "I'm just going back to my friends." The rain was getting worse. A streak of lightning lit up the air. "We both know there's no one else here," he said. "What idiot would come to a cemetery in the middle of a rainy night? Besides you, that is." He started pulling me by my wrist. I used my free hand to hit him, but he would not let me go. He kept pulling me harder and harder until we reached that open plot. It was a perfect rectangle, 6 feet deep. Two shovels were laying by its side. "Do you want to jump in?" he asked. "Or do you want me to push?" "Neither!" I screamed. He used both hands to pull me toward the hole. He was so strong. I screamed as loud as I could for him to stop, but he wouldn't. And then he froze and his hands lost their grip. In less than a second, he let go of me and fell into the hole himself. I looked up and saw that Justin was standing there holding a shovel. I guess he had bashed the man on the head. I looked down in the hole and saw the man lying on the dirt. He was conscious but barely moving, There was a big bloody gash on the side of his head.
What?
He mumbled.
Let me out.
Who was that guy? Justin asked me.
I have no idea.
From the hole, the man was mumbling something I couldn't understand. Then I realized he was threatening us. He said that we assaulted him. He said that he'd sue us for everything we had. He said that he was just playing an innocent joke on me, and we attacked him out of nowhere.
So if we let you go, Justin asked, you'll go straight to the police and report us?
Yes, he said. Okay then, Justin said. And then he took his shovel and started to throw dirt over the man.
What are you doing?
I asked Justin.
What does it look like? He answered.
You heard what he said. As Justin shoveled in more dirt, the man began to choke.
I was kidding, he sputtered. I won't say anything.
Justin turned toward me. So? He said. Do you want to help?
I looked at Justin for a long time. After everything that happened that night, I finally trusted him completely. I took the second shovel and helped him bury the man alive. It took about 10 minutes for the man to stop screaming, and then another 20 to fill up the rest of the hole. Then Justin put both of our shovels exactly where we'd found them. The rain would wash away our fingerprints and footprints long before anyone discovered the body. By then, the rain had let up and little streaks of moonlight shined down on Justin. He was so handsome.
Well, he said, can I show you my favorite spot now? I nodded. He took me across the cemetery until we found a mausoleum decorated by two kissing statues. There was a marble bench in front, and Justin sat on it. I joined him. Even though we were soaking wet, we sat there for the longest time and just enjoyed each other's company. Since then, Justin and I started dating officially. We're still together. Like I said, he's done a lot for my confidence. And as for the guy that we buried, I have no idea what happened to him. I assume someone found his body, but no one traced it back to us.
Look, I was running late. That's it. Nothing nefarious. I took a nap. It was supposed to be a power nap, and I hit snooze a couple of times. I'm sorry I don't have photo evidence of me sleeping in my apartment. So I was already running behind, and then I had to stop to get wine or flowers or something for Sandy. Tate has told me so many times how annoyed Sandy gets when I show up empty-handed to her dinner parties. And I explained to him it can't be considered a dinner party if it's just them and me. There at least has to be one other person. I want to say there needs to be at least two other people, but I'm not winning any arguments here, clearly. If I had known what crazy stuff they were cooking up besides the promised mac and cheese, I would have flaked on the whole affair. Anyway, I guess it started in my apartment when I finally woke up. It wasn't my alarm that woke me up, it was thunder. It was an absolute downpour. It pounded against the building. I got up and checked the time. I fluffed my hair to make it look like I didn't just wake up, grabbed my raincoat, and was out the door. The rain was falling so hard and fast that my windshield wipers were on the highest setting, and I still couldn't see the road. I stopped at the grocery store and purchased some wine and flowers, exactly what Tate said Sandy wanted. Then I sped over to their place. I could tell something was off when they opened their door to welcome me inside. "Late again," Sandy started. She looked at Tate as if to say, "I told you so," but she's always kind of a bitch towards me. I didn't think anything of it. "It smells amazing," I told her. She responded with an "mm-hmm," and walked away. I turned to Tate to be like, "What the heck?" But the guy wouldn't make eye contact with me. We followed Sandy into the dining room. They set the plates, so they sat on one side of the table together, directly across from me, just like you and me now. Dinner party? It was an interrogation. She brought out the mac and cheese, a sight to behold. I'm not her biggest fan, and she's not mine, but the woman can cook. I don't think I even took two bites before Tate accused me. "James," he started with a deep sigh, "we know." "Know what?" I asked. "We know why you're always late and look so disheveled." I thought it was a joke, so I chuckled. I let out a reasonable chuckle. and Sandy was so disgusted.
How many?
Sandy spit out at me. I gave her a confused look. How many alarms? I asked. Tate cut in. How many people, James, have you killed? We know that you're behind the string of missing people that's been all over the news. At this point, I still thought it was a joke, so I laughed. They were so severe, though. Both of them leering at me across the table. I asked them if they were joking, and Tate gave me a firm no. He claimed to have evidence and pulled out a fat folder. They started showing me all of it. There were so many pictures of a guy that looked like me all over town. I mean, I see it. We have the same nose and the same eye color, but we have different hairlines. I have a widow's peak. Look, it's receding. That guy has a whole head of hair. It happens to be shaved down to roughly the same length as mine, I said. Trying to defend myself, I pointed out that I don't own a jacket like the man in the pictures. I asked if they had ever seen me in a jacket like that. Sandy turned to Tate and said, He knew we were suspicious and destroyed evidence. He probably has taken other precautionary measures in case someone found him out. Tate looked at me and told me there was more that they had found. He led me back to his office to show me a massive bulletin board with all the missing people and where I was when they took place. Many of them went missing around Sandy's dinners. So I guess, because I was late, they thought it was because I was murdering someone. Except I had a solid alibi. For Jessica, on the 28th, I wasn't in town. I was 2 hours away from my aunt's funeral. They said I could have easily driven there and back in the time she went missing, so it wasn't solid enough. They weren't listening to reason. So I had enough and tried to leave. Apparently, Tate took my keys when he took my raincoat when they so warmly welcomed me into their home. The rain was coming down so hard, but I still considered making a run for it. They were convinced I had killed those people. Sandy asked why I would do something like this, and I told her I didn't do anything. I don't know why someone would do that because I'm not someone who would. Sandy and Tate should know that. I've known Tate since fourth grade. No one knows me better than him. I have no idea how he thinks I'm capable of something like this. They were so insistent. It felt like the walls were closing in on me. Tate had my keys. I couldn't leave. I was at their mercy. And then the red and blue lights started flashing. I couldn't process that they called the cops because I was still processing that they thought I could do this. I kept insisting that what they had wasn't solid. It wasn't enough to prove I did what they were claiming. I begged them to see reason and to tell the cops it was a mistake. They refused. They treated me like a stranger. Sorry, I'm still processing that they would do this to me and believe this about me so strongly. The cop looked at me with contempt.
Well, your friends compiled quite a file on you.
It can't be enough to hold up in court, though. Like I said, that guy has different hair. You have the wrong guy. I don't know where my friends got this idea. It's completely out of left field. Completely.
Well, they said you were clever. They said that you could be manipulative.
Tears crowded my eyes.
I don't know why they would say that. I swear you have the wrong guy.
I tried to sit back, but the cuffs cut into my wrists.
I promise I would never do such evil things.
The cop didn't break eye contact with me. He simply said, "A court will decide." It's been 6 months since this incident, and still no one believed me. The day of the court ruling came, and they pronounced me guilty on all counts. I was sentenced to life in prison. I consider myself lucky I didn't receive the death sentence. As the guard grabbed my arm to escort me out of the corner of my eye, I saw a man with the same nose and the same colored eyes as me. He was sitting in the back, wearing the jacket they claimed I destroyed, smirking.
My name is Eric. A few weekends ago, my girlfriend Nicole had to babysit her much younger half-sister Lucy. Her mom and stepdad were on some vacation, and they didn't have anyone else to watch the girl. Nicole asked me if that would be okay, and I said, sure, absolutely. Nicole and I didn't have any children of our own, and I always liked Lucy. To be completely honest, I think Lucy liked me more than Nicole. Nicole was a bit too strict with her, but she saw me as some kind of a cool uncle. When Lucy arrived on Friday night, she completely ignored Nicole and ran straight to me to give me a big hug. Uncle Eric, she screamed. Where are you gonna take me this weekend? Honestly, we weren't planning to take her anywhere, but for some reason I blurted out, Chuck E. Cheese! She absolutely freaked out. Nicole did too, but for different reasons. So even though Nicole and I would both prefer to stay inside, we took Lucy to Chuck E. Cheese. I don't think I'd ever been inside one before, not even as a kid. It was pretty much what I expected though. There were loud flashing arcade games everywhere, and a bunch of very run-down looking parents watching their overactive children race around. Shoot me now, Nicole whispered to me when we entered. I laughed, but I guess Lucy heard her too because she turned around and glared at Nicole. Just joking, Nicole told her sister. I love this place. Without saying anything, Lucy ran off to the arcade. Nicole and I found a table that wasn't too sticky, and we ordered our pizza. The two of us sat at the table for a long time. I tried to suggest other fun things we could do with Lucy while she was here, but Nicole wouldn't listen. She kept complaining about how I forced her to come to Chuck E. Cheese. She was pretty mad at me. While we talked, I tried to keep an eye on Lucy. I saw her playing some of the arcade games. Then I lost her for a bit when she ran off to the bathroom. When she came back, I saw her try one of those racing games where the players sit on a big plastic motorcycle in front of a giant screen. If I were her age, that would have been something I like. While Nicole kept nagging me, I watched Lucy race by herself. I guess she dropped something because when she was finished, she got off the motorcycle and started looking around the floor for something. I was about to go back there and help her, but that was the exact moment the pizza came. Nicole shouted for Lucy to join us. When we were all together, I served everyone a piece. As the good uncle that I was, I gave Lucy the biggest piece. She thanked me, but then she passed the slice to Nicole. Here, Nikki, she said. You deserve this more than me. For once, Nicole was flattered by her little sister. Thanks, Luce, she said. I started eating my slice. It wasn't as bad as I'd expected. A little greasy, but I liked the sauce. Do you like it? I asked Nicole. She took her first bite and instantly started to choke. I thought she'd burned her tongue or something, but it was much more serious than that. She was choking horribly. She wouldn't stop. She grabbed a napkin and spat into it. The napkin was covered in both cheese and blood. What happened? I asked. By then, Nicole had stopped choking. There was glass in my food, she said. She held up a long, thin shard of glass. I couldn't believe it. She almost died. I'm okay, Nicole kept repeating. A waitress noticed the commotion and came over. She was just a teenager, but I was so freaked out that I started yelling at her. The waitress apologized profusely and took our pizza back to the kitchen. She said she'd bring another one, but I refused. We needed to get out of there. By then, the manager came out to talk to us. He tried to offer us a bunch of gift cards. I guess he didn't want us to sue. I yelled at him, too. I just couldn't control myself. Nicole was silent the whole time. I think she was in shock. Then I looked over at Lucy to make sure she wasn't scared for her life. That's when I noticed that she was smiling. It was such a dark, angry smile. Just one look at her, and I knew she'd put the glass in her sister's food. We're getting out of here, I said. No, Lucy screamed. She turned toward Nicole. Her face was filled with fake concern. Nikki, I'm so sorry. That must have been really scary. But before we leave, can you play one arcade game with me, please? I promise it'll make you feel better. Fine, Nicole said. I wanted to say something, but I still wasn't sure what had happened. I assumed that Lucy was guilty, but I wasn't 100% certain. Before I could do anything, Lucy grabbed Nicole's hand and led her toward the arcade area in the back. She took her right toward that motorcycle game. I followed them. You can sit here, Lucy said, patting one of the two plastic motorcycles. I rode this one last time, and it was real fun. Nicole sat down, and Lucy climbed onto the motorcycle next to her. Lucy popped in a couple of quarters, and an image of a racetrack appeared on the screen in front of them. It started a countdown. Right away, I could tell something was wrong with Nicole's bike. It was shaking wildly, while Lucy's bike didn't move much at all. I thought back to half an hour earlier when I saw Lucy crawling around the bottom of the bike, looking for something. That's when I realized that she wasn't looking for something. She was tampering with the bike. "Nicole!" I shouted. "Get off that!" But I was too late. The digital track had a sharp turn, and when Nicole tried to turn her bike, a couple of loose screws popped off and the whole bike crashed onto the ground. Nicole screamed in pain. Her left leg was stuck under the metal and plastic. And to her side, Lucy happily finished the race on her unbroken bike. She crossed the finish line and shouted, "I win!" I crouched down next to Nicole and carefully pulled the bike off of her leg. She was screaming bloody murder, and I couldn't blame her. Her ankle was bent at a terrible angle, and I could see the bone sticking out of her skin. Once again, the manager came over and gave us a string of apologies, but I stopped him. "It's not your fault," I said. And with that, I helped Nicole limp back to the car and drove her straight to the hospital. Lucy sat in the back seat, and she didn't say a word the whole time. When we got to the hospital, I helped Nicole check in, and then I took Lucy straight to their psychologist. Ever since then, Nicole and I refused to babysit. When my brother told me that our mother was rushed to the hospital, I didn't believe him. At least not until I left the university campus, went home, found it empty, and rushed to the address he gave me over the phone call. My mother was never sick. She rarely even had a reason to use meds or see the doctor. I couldn't even recall a day when she complained about a headache. Hence, being surprised and disbelieving was inevitable for me. The moment I entered the hospital, I didn't know what to expect, but my mouth lost the position to describe what my eyes saw. Not only was I speechless, but I didn't know how to react. My mother lay on the hospital bed. Her head was wrapped in bandages, her legs and hands too. She couldn't look at me with her swollen eyes and lips. I so wanted to know what happened to her and made her that way. My brother took me out of the room after a while. "What happened?" I asked him, and he was both happy and sad to narrate the story. Happy because he could finally share the burden with someone. Sad because the story affected our mother. From my brother's side of the narration, the strange happening started before my father left the house. My dad and mom haven't had the best relationship since we were young. They fought at the slightest chance, argued, and were always at loggerheads. I never thought they would last together for as long as they did. Their nothing close to smooth relationship was one of the reasons why I chose a university far from home. I didn't want to be involved with them, and I also prayed that they found peace together. It didn't mean I didn't love them. 2 years after I departed from home, I received a call from my mother, narrating how my father packed his luggage and left her alone in the house. I thought it was one of her pranks, probably because she wanted to draw me home. So, I simply consoled her and told her that Father would come back to her. After that call, I didn't check on her. It took another 2 weeks for me to become remorseful. My brother called and said that he'd gone home to meet Mom because my dad indeed left her alone. I called my mother and apologized for my insensitivity. She accepted my apology and I ended it there. If my brother was at home with her, I had no reason to go there. I thought at the time that the reason my father left was either that my mother caught him cheating, or because he finally figured out that he couldn't cope with my mother anymore. If that was how they wanted to end their marriage, so be it. What I didn't know was that my mother and father had started to draw closer, but some strange occurrences drove him away. My brother added in his narration that just before my father left the house, twice, he reported that he left dirty plates in the kitchen. But by the time he returned to wash the plates, they were washed and cleaned and back on the shelf and in the cupboard. My mother laughed so hard at the story that my dad felt very foolish. It didn't happen to my mother because she never washed the plates. My dad always did the washing, even when they weren't each other's best. It was a simple, unspoken rule. She simply told my dad that he was probably imagining things, and he washed the plates but forgot that he did. My dad never talked about the plate issue again. If that was all there was to it, perhaps he would have remained in the house with his wife. But as time went on, my father had more things to report and complain about to my mother. The tap was running when I woke up in the middle of the night. I didn't leave the gas on, but when I tried to cook this morning, I almost got burned. The floor of the sitting room was slippery this evening and full of water. Did you spill water by chance? My father was scared, but my mother thought that he was imagining things, making things up to show her off as the careless or insensitive one. Eventually, a big fight broke out between the two of them, and my father chose to leave the house. He didn't want to sound insane and chose to make that decision for peace. That's when my brother moved in. He said that all seemed well when he started to stay with Mom, but that atmosphere of peace didn't last for long. The tables turned and strange occurrences came to my mother's notice. It was worse for her. She woke up to the feeling of someone sleeping beside her. At first, she thought she missed her husband, so she said nothing about it. But then it continued. She began to hear voices in her ear, running taps, running feet, and crashing plates. Fear enveloped her, and she eventually told my brother about it. She also told him about what happened when our father was still around. My brother comforted her, but said that it could be her imagination. They decided to stop imagining bad things and live peacefully, pretending like those awful things weren't happening. And that worked for a while. But one day, out of the blue, my mother started to slap her face, scream, and jump. It became really bad, and my brother decided to take her to the hospital. The doctor gave her medicine and concluded that it was merely hallucinations. They returned home. With time, they hoped that all would be well and the imaginations would stop. But the worst came. My mother woke up early one morning, drawn by the sound of soft knocks on the door. She rushed out of her room, but first turned off the running tap in the bathroom. She was at the edge of the staircase when a voice whispered something in her ears. Hearing those words, my mother screamed so loud and slapped herself hard on the face. The motion caused her to slip and she bounced down the staircase and ended up right at the feet of my brother, who ran out of his room after hearing her scream. She lay on the ground, unconscious. That was the reason they were in the hospital, and that was the reason my brother called me. After checking on my mother and seeing that she was fine, we went back to the house. But what we saw scared us far more than all that had happened in the past few months. The house was filled with water in every corner. Broken plates littered the ground, and we could hear the running taps. We didn't need to be told to know. The house was haunted. By what or who? We would never know. Because once we packed what our hands and bags could carry, we never set foot in that house again.